the next mayor of Hamilton, David Christopherson. Yeah.
Make sure this is going to work.
It'll work.
There you go. Well, make sure of that. But the way I flail arms around...
It'll reach.
Yeah, hang on. They want me to be brief. The only way I can do that is try to stick to a few notes. Because I got a lot of things that I need to say in a very short period of time. And the first one is, it's too bad everybody wouldn't have a chance to stand up here where I am and look at the support that exists in the city of Hamilton to stop the expressway and save our natural valley. Political opponents in this case are people who have the money.
Yes.
Right.
And we know what we're up against. We're up against a lot of powerful forces in this town who have decided that it's in their best interest to build this expressway. But I want to say to each and every one of you, I've been in elected office for 20 years. On election day, money doesn't count. People count. Votes count. For why we're here today. We've been fighting as a community to preserve this green space for future generations for decades now. And we've got a government, a local government, unfortunately, that has felt it appropriate to send out what I call, in my opinion, threatening, bully tactic type letters trying to scare people away from doing what they have a right to do. There is not a one of us here today that I believe supports any kind of violence. In fact, if violence in any way were to break out right now, my gut reaction is 99.9% of the people here today would turn on that and stop it and say that's the opposite of the message we're sending. We're about peace and we're about the future. I see some of the neighbors are out. You know, these neighbors, this is where they live. We've come here to make a political point. When we leave, this is their home. They had promises made to them.
Yeah.
Promises that over the summer, that during June and July, they would be consulted on what's going to happen here starting tomorrow, and that didn't happen.
Here, here.
And I want to say very clearly that I think City Council has an absolute obligation to stop their plans and honor their commitment to talk to the people that are affected by this. The permits are not in place.
That's right.
You can make an argument that the legal requirements to do what they're about to start are not in place, and so legally as well as morally, there's no right to start this project tomorrow. And another reason why it ought to stop. I want to talk very briefly about three aspects of why we're here today and why I agree with those who have spoken about the need for a different vision. There are no special formulas, magic bullets, or miracles waiting to turn this city around. If we're going to turn this city around, we've got to take ownership of our own community, ownership of our own future, and ownership of what we have to leave as a legacy to the generations that are to follow. And I, as a candidate for mayor, want to represent that vision of the kind of Hamilton we want. I want to talk about the economic aspect, the health care, and I want to talk a bit about the future. Let's talk about the health care. First of all, 40,000 trees, the lungs of our community, are about to be wiped out. How insane is that for a city that has a pollution problem in terms of its image? There are studies done by non-politicians, by scientists, by medical experts that exist right now that say if this expressway is built, seniors, and children are going to be affected in terms of their health, in terms of increased asthma and other respiratory diseases. You know, it wasn't that long ago that city council shut down Swaru. Nothing changed at Swaru from the day before they shut it down to the day after, except that our city council finally accepted the argument that you cannot justify to continue to poison your own people. And so they shut down Swaru against all the plans. Horrible, horrible economics. A lot of money lost. A lot of planning that wasn't done because it wasn't anticipated. And yet, the council felt at the end of the day, preventing the poisoning of your own citizens was a priority of any government. And so they shut down Swaru. And I say to all of you, my friends, there are just as many good reasons to stop the expressway and save our valley. The biggest hit that I take as a candidate is that I don't care about economics, I don't care about growth, an argument that I don't care about jobs, that I don't care about the future economic well-being of this community. Let me say to you, my friends, I feel that my position is exactly the opposite of that. Unsustainable growth is not a future for Hamilton, and giving away our quality of life is not part of the formula for a successful Hamilton into the future. Right now, we are spending about $1 million a week to service our municipal debt. $1 million a week. Every dollar to build this expressway that comes from the city has to be borrowed because we don't have that money in the bank. And what does that mean? That means that our $1 million a week costs are going to go up. That means less money for other services. One of the reasons I raise this with you is that the very same people, many of the same people, are promoting the expressway and say, yes, it's good economics to borrow money, millions of dollars that you don't have to build it. They're the same people who are saying the other magic elixir is if we could just cut taxes. Never mind the services that are lost, never mind the quality of life that's lost, just cut taxes, that'll generate the economic stimulation, give us the jobs, and then suddenly we'll be in paradise. Well, let me tell you what the reality is. If we borrow this money to build the expressway, and we still have to keep our taxes competitive, which we do, then what that means is the very people who are arguing for this expressway are arguing that we take away services mainly from the suburban areas, because when you start to cut the revenue of the city, some of the first things that get cut is garbage collection, snow removal, fire and police services, and mostly it impacts the suburban areas. Because the other issue in this campaign is about the future of the new city and our ability to be seen and feel ourselves as one collective people with many different components. But I got a lot of sympathy for people living in Flamborough and Ancaster and Dundas who have seen their snow removal services lowered, their garbage collection lowered, concerns about fire services and police, and going further in debt and paying more money in interest and paying off that long-term debt denies us the fiscal flexibility to build the kind of community that we all want, that we know this can be. The dollars and the economics of this project do not add up. And I'm prepared to defend that all the way to November 10th. Talk about one key example, and I'll try not to abuse the platform, that ladder platform I've been given here today. But I want to ask everybody, if you were at the launch of my campaign, you heard me speak to this, I'm going to raise it again because I think it's one of the best lessons that we have. Anybody who brings a visitor from out of town during the summer, one of the first things you're going to do is find some opportunity to take people where?
Valley.
To the valley, and also to our waterfront.
Right.
Why? Well, because we're proud of what we have there. What do we have there? We have beautiful, beautiful Bayfront Park. We have Pier 4 Park. We have the waterfront trail. That trail system, how many of you use that trail system? Absolutely. What's that worth to us? Because I want you to remember that in the 1970s, there was an economic argument being made that the Lax property where Bayfront Park is now built should become an industrial site. Now, there are good economic arguments, and I'm sure they were made at the time. But I ask you, how much money would it take before we'd be prepared to let that go? $5 million a year for the city? 10, 15, 20, 50 million? How much money would it take to replace the quality of life that we have on our waterfront and that we're building on? Because of the fantastic staff that we have at City Hall, I'm getting tired of those people getting beat up. They're there for us. And we need politicians that are going to back the kind of planners and City Hall staff that gave us our waterfront. That was Hamiltonians that did that. And so when I think about how much poorer we'd be as a community if we didn't have our waterfront back, then I put myself in the place of future generations of Hamiltonians who are going to be paying hundreds of millions of dollars, by the way, to clean up the harbor because of the polluting we allowed, mainly because we didn't know in the last century. Well, we know now. And we know a lot more since the approvals, by the way, were given for this project close to 20 years ago. You couldn't get this project through a current environmental assessment if your life depended on it.
That's
because
right.
It makes no sense. You want to know about the future of Hamilton? Yeah, part of it's determined by what will happen on November the 10th when we have a municipal election. That'll be part of it. But if you really want to know what Hamilton's going to be in the future, talk to the young people who are going to be the leadership generation in a short while. And let me tell you, you talk to young people in this city about whether or not paving a valley in the era of Kyoto makes any damn sense at all, and they'll say, no, you have no right to take away my valley. I think it says a lot that the Honorable John Monroe is here today. I think we should acknowledge that again. His career, active career, is somewhat past, but he's here because he cares. He cares about the future, and I would say to you that anyone who cares about the future of this city has to believe that destroying this valley is not a part of it. What do I think should happen? Immediately, city council should acknowledge that they've got an obligation to the neighbors who are right there, and they've got an obligation to the people of the city of Hamilton to stop this project now. Yeah. And two things should happen. First one is that I believe there's also a quality of life issue for a lot of the people at Upper Stony Creek and on the mountain who have to come down Highway 20 in Mount Albion every day of their life, whether to go to work or to go to school, to enjoy this community. And if you live and if you work and if you have to drive in that traffic day after day after day, that is beyond what someone should have to accept. And I think one of the obligations City Council has upon saying we're not going to build the expressway is that dealing with the bottleneck issues, fellow citizens who are traversing the mountain, we have an obligation to them to make sure that we invest some money in their quality of life. So something for Highway 20 and something for Mount Albion has to be a part of the next step when we say this project has to stop. And let me just, I want to touch on that a bit, because I know there's some people who say, wait, don't do anything that moves traffic quicker and that, and that's fair enough, but that's not where I am. I want to be very clear where I am as a candidate, that I believe that quality of life issues come in many, many different shapes and sizes, and if you have to sit in that traffic often enough, that's a quality of life issue, and we've got an obligation to take care of our neighbors and friends on that. The other thing that needs to happen is, let's have a legitimate discussion about alternatives. Let's talk about something other than destroying our valley. We are the fourth largest city in Ontario. Our government, our population, and our budget are bigger than many Canadian provinces. We can find an alternative, my friends, if we just put our minds to it and we have the political will. We can find alternatives that we can live with that'll give us a vibrant economy, but let us hand down a quality of life to our children and grandchildren that we can be proud of. The last thing I want to say is that every study about the future of Hamilton and what is stopping us and holding us back is image. And I don't like to say this, but it's the truth. In that image is the fact that we look and are perceived as a polluted city and not a desirable place to choose if you have a choice. Now, if we all agree that that's our beginning assumption and that changing our image more to what our waterfront says about Hamiltonians than the current state of the air and water and land, then doesn't it make an awful lot of sense that we send out a message across the world that says, Hamilton has changed. Hamilton has said our environment matters, and not only will we protect it, we will use that as part of the success story for our future. And yes, the headline goes from being, there goes Hamilton again, who else would be stupid enough to pave a valley? That message changes and becomes, Hamilton takes control of its own future and preserves its environment. Thank you very much.
Thomas B. McQuesten, one of Hamilton's greatest visionaries. Public parks are public places. They are recognized by the Supreme Court of Canada as places where freedom of assembly logically takes place and where protests logically take place. And it is specifically protected. The city has taken no steps to eliminate the park status of King's Forest or even of the acre and a half behind us, which is slated for clear cutting in the next few days. If the city thinks it can trash this park without any formal process, then no park in the city is safe. They can do the same thing tomorrow to Gage Park and to any other park in the city. And that isn't right, and they need to go through a process and allow people the opportunity to speak about whether we want to see our parks carved up. The city has not given proper notice to this neighborhood and has not carried out the public consultation process required and which it itself has promised. Formal community consultation process is required by the city's own policies set out for public consultation for this project. They were laid out in a document that is now on the city's website, which was supposed to be out a couple of months ago, but just made it onto the website last week. And it says that there will be a minimum of 4 weeks consultation between the time people being notified of a project and a portion of this project moving forward and the actual construction initiation. The formal notification to the residents of this community arrived in the mail on Friday. Yeah. That was the first formal notification. Last Friday, August 1st. The notification said that there's going to be consultation in June and July. That's nice. It would have been nice to have seen the notification about that before August. Prior to that, the city admits that it has delivered notices to a mere 23 homes down one side of this right-of-way. That took place on the July 4th weekend, and we have found many homeowners who say they didn't even get the notice. Last week, the Neighborhood Association in this area wrote formally to the city demanding that they set up a consultation process as promised, beginning in early September when the summer vacationers have returned. If the city has its way, some people will arrive back from a trip to a very different living environment. The contract between the city and Dufferin Construction we have a copy of, and it tells the construction company that they are required to participate in a community construction consultation committee. So that's also written in there. In addition, the 1997 declaration order, exemption order, that the provincial government provided to the city requires detailed consultation at the design and construction stage before construction can proceed. And if that isn't enough, if the rules of the city itself aren't enough, then the principles of fairness and justice simply say that if you're going to have your neighborhood turned upside down, and the plans here, starting on Tuesday morning, is a wall 8 to 10 feet high down both sides of this right-of-way against the fences or very close to those fences, and then the clearing of a half hectare behind us, that kind of impact is going to be massive on the people who actually live here and who have to put up with this, who have their lives turned upside down. And to say that they don't require any notice, they don't require any consultation, they don't require that the city allow them any input into this, is simply wrong. Thirdly, the city has not received, and it cannot produce, written statements by the Niagara Escarpment Commission which override or countermand repeated Niagara Escarpment Commission statements that indicate that a new development permit is required for the expressway project because of the large number of changes in the project that have occurred since the first permit was issued in 1987. And the city says the 1987 permit is all it needs. But since 1987, we've had the addition of an 80-meter wide, 12-meter deep cut in the face of the escarpment that was not called for in 1985. We've had a plan to relocate and reconstruct the creek from the foot of the escarpment to the QEW. 7,600 meters of new creek bed, not contemplated until about 3 years ago. We've had the redesign of the interchange that's being planned right here, which this construction supposed to start tomorrow is addressing. And we've had plans for construction of ponds, stormwater facilities, and flood zones that were also not contemplated. Anyone who's familiar with the Niagara Escarpment and the Niagara Escarpment Commission knows that if you want to add a little bit onto the shed at the back of your barn, you need a permit from the Niagara Escarpment Commission if you're in the plan area. And this entire area, down to the THNB CPR rail line, is part of the Niagara Escarpment plan area. And it is covered by the Niagara Escarpment Planning and Development Act. And to say that no permit is required, or that a permit issued 16 years ago is still valid, even though these massive changes have taken place, again is clearly wrong, and to move forward is clearly illegal. The escarpment permit specifically applies to the area behind the right-of-way here, in the area that is scheduled to be cleared. There are other permits that don't apply to that specific area, but apply to the project in general, which the city has not secured. And they are saying, well, we'll get those. We're going to start here, and then we'll have some more later on. But they are counting their chickens before they hatch. They are assuming that those permits and those authorizations will all fall into place, that they will fall into place when they want them, and that they will fall into place in the way that they expect them to fall into place, and that there won't be conditions attached to them which require changes to this project at a minimum. Those permits include an authorization under the Federal Fisheries Act to relocate this stream. That has not been provided and is unlikely to be provided in the near future. They also include permits to remove, excavate 70,000 tons of toxic waste from the Rennie Street dump that lies directly in the path of the expressway. And city officials have been candidly telling us that if they can't go through that dump, they can't build the expressway. But they don't have any authorization to remove that material from the landfill. They don't have any authorization to even operate on that landfill because it's been used as a landfill right into the middle of the 1990s. And you need to be 25 years beyond the end of a closing of a landfill before you can even think about building on it or somewhere near it. And in this case, they want to actually excavate a huge portion of that landfill. In addition, as you know, a federal environmental assessment has just been called for the pipeline relocation that is scheduled for an area quite close to here, as well as up on the escarpment near Mud Street. And that federal assessment is going to take a few months. The city tried very hard to prevent that from taking place, but when it was actually announced, their response was, oh, it doesn't matter. We're going to get a permit anyway, it's guaranteed. And this doesn't affect any of our construction plans. And by the way, we're going to sue the National Energy Board just to be on the safe side. So we're heading into another judicial review, expensive court case. If you remember 5 years ago, there was a call by Mr. Estrin, the city's outside lawyer, that we need to do a judicial review against the Federal Environmental Assessment for the Fisheries Act. And it'll cost $50,000 to $75,000. It ended up costing $4.5 million. And now this time he's come back and he says we need to do another review. It'll only cost $50,000. So we'll see where that one goes. But again, the principles of environmental law and of environmental assessment is you do the assessment before you do the construction. And how anyone can think that it's any different is beyond me. Consequently, the city is acting recklessly and in contempt of the law by assuming that all permits will be provided and provided in a way and time that will not require amendments or alterations to the expressway. And this behavior on the part of the city council, the majority of the city council, also jeopardizes the financial health of the city and imposes an unnecessary burden on its taxpayers. There's one more thing. I received a phone call this morning from one of the expert birders in the Hamilton Naturalist Club. We asked them to go and have a look at the area, which is slated to be clear-cut starting tomorrow. Earlier this morning, he was able to confirm that at least three migratory bird species are nesting in the area slated for destruction. These include house wrens, song sparrows, and black-capped chickadees. And there was also evidence of nesting activity or feeding of young birds by five other species. The Federal Migratory Birds Convention Act specifically forbids disturbance of nesting migratory species. We will have the Canadian Wildlife Service down here tomorrow morning to confirm the presence of these nesting species and to inform the city that it cannot begin construction while looking at it. None of this, at the end of the day, will necessarily stop those who are contemptuous of the law and who are desperate to prove to their developer and construction friends that they're up to the task of pushing through this expressway, come hell or high water. But let it be understood who's acting lawfully and who isn't. And if the task of defending fair process and legal requirements falls to us, we are ready.